Welcome back to The Drive with Kevin Weiss on ESPN Blacksburg, AM 1430, FM 94.1. We've got Chris Coleman from TechSideline.com in studio. Chris, how's it going after a loss?
Probably it's going well, man. It's a long week, and by that I mean it's a short week. Short week makes it extra long if your job is to cover the team. So we're right in the middle of it, man.
So, and you weren't in the press box; you were in the stands during the game. Yeah. What was the game day atmosphere?
Oh, it was awesome.
Beforehand, compared to what has been in the past.
It was top notch. I sat in section 2, which is right above the entrance into the stadium where the team runs out for Enter Sandman.
Right,
so had a bird's eye view of it. Yep. And it was top notch. I really had a great time, and wish Michael Brewer hadn't gotten hurt, because I think that would have been a pretty good one.
Were you surprised when Cardale Jones came out number 12 out there instead of JT Barrett?
I was a little bit surprised, but you can see why, can't you?
Yeah.
That guy, he's got a cannon for an arm. And he's really tough to tackle because he's so big. I don't think he doesn't like to play school, so he's probably going to leave after this year, and then it'll be JT Barrett's team again, who's a much more likable guy. But anyway, Cardale Jones, his talent level is obvious.
Yeah, I heard some rumors that it might have been one of those things where if Cardale Jones hadn't gotten the start, that there would have been some locker room strife and everything, and that he'd be in a bad mood, and it would affect the team.
I'm sure he would be in a bad mood. Yeah. So that's tough. I mean, it was good that they moved Braxton Miller to H-back from their perspective, because if he's still your quarterback, or he's still a quarterback, there's plenty of players on that team who played with him a couple years ago when he was the starting quarterback. So you run the risk of dividing your team into three camps if you have three quarterbacks competing for it. Two camps is bad enough, but three would have been really bad. So that was obviously the right decision, especially when you consider how he played the other night.
And how well did he play? I mean, Braxton Miller looked incredible over there in H-back.
He's an incredible athlete. He really is. I mean, he's a major mismatch, and that's the perfect position for him, because he doesn't have to be a true wide receiver. He doesn't have to be a true running back. He can play that Percy Harvin role, and he's that type of athlete.
I don't think many of us thought he would be that good that quickly.
Gosh,
that was incredible.
Yeah.
Speaking of the wide receivers, our wideouts did kind of okay, but Bucky Hodges didn't really have a good game. Ford was okay.
Mm-hmm.
Did you expect a little bit more from these guys?
I did, as far as the starters go, but I think they kind of – we got to remember that they're still true sophomores as far as Ford and Phillips, and I thought they got out-muscled a little bit, just by some bigger, stronger players. I still think it's going to prove that they'll be much improved, and I thought their blocking was better. But on the whole, I thought they got taken out of their game a little bit by a very good football team. I did expect more from Bucky. I mean, how could you not expect more than zero catches, right?
How alarming is it that Dimitri Knowles and Kevin Asante didn't get, I don't think, any snaps?
I don't remember seeing him on the field. I remember seeing Asante back there for some kickoff returns, but I don't remember seeing them on the field for wide receiver at all, unless it was right at the end of the game. I would say it's alarming, but I don't think it's anything that we didn't already know. I'm not surprised that none of the backups played. From what I saw in the scrimmage, they're just not very good, not any good. And if you noticed, C.J. Carroll on the depth chart this week is actually up to number 2 at flanker, and Dimitri Knowles is down to number 3. So a 5'7", 160-pound redshirt freshman walk-on is in the 2-deep at wide receiver, which kind of shows how well Virginia Tech recruited there over a 2 or 3 year stretch at wide receiver. So it is what it is. We're bringing in a really good class in 2016 of wide receivers. I think it's going to be a very talented and a deep wide receiver class. But the bottom line is those guys will only be true freshmen next year. We're not going to have good wide receiver depth until 2017. It is what it is. There's nothing we can do about it as fans. Just got to accept it.
With the wide receivers, one thing that concerns me is, Isaiah Ford and Cam Phillips are going to be fine and everything, but come the fourth quarter, those guys are probably going to get worn down.
If they've played 75 snaps, in the first three quarters, that's very possible. And it also, if you start playing tired, that increases your chances of injury. If you're a step slow, it increases your chances of injury. Plus, just being on the field so much makes it a higher percentage of a chance you get injured. So, And, man, if one of those guys gets hurt, particularly Isaiah Ford, I mean, that could be as disastrous to the offense as Michael Brewer, as losing Michael Brewer, because instead of, you know, having Brendan Motley throw into Isaiah Ford, then you'd have Brendan Motley throw into Kevin Asante or whatever, right. You know, and that's just not a recipe for success.
On the defensive side of the ball, did you expect more from our D-line? I mean, zero sacks. They got to the guys back there a few times.
Yeah.
They weren't able to
break them down.
Plays. Yeah.
Yeah. And they've struggled with mobile quarterbacks, you know, the last couple of years. For quite a bit of the game, they only went with three defensive linemen. Like, Akanem wasn't on the field, mm-hmm. and Ronnie Van Dyke was out there, and that's mm-hmm. kind of strange to me. It's like you're taking one of your best players off the field and putting in a guy who hasn't played in 2 years. That was just kind of strange. Bud said after the game that he probably outthought himself too much. I mean, that's the thing when you have a whole offseason to prepare for a big game. You got a chance to come up with a great game plan, but you also have a chance to outthink yourself. And he might have done that a little bit. It just didn't make much sense having a Canem not on the field there. So I think that played part of it. Luther Maddie was a defensive MVP of the game. He graded out higher. But you know, I don't think they had a great chance to succeed. I think when you line Daddy Nicholas up as basically a defensive tackle over a guard, that's not putting him in a great position to succeed, especially when Ohio State pretty much knows the bear front is coming, or at least some variation of the bear front. So, I don't think Bud had his best game as Tech's defensive coordinator. I also think he has some weaknesses on defense, such as middle linebacker, maybe, and probably nickel as well.
And middle linebacker, Andrew Matua-Puaka, not to be too hard on the kid, but he seemed to be out of position quite a bit and just whiffed on some would-be tackles like Cardale Jones, Ezekiel Elliott. He was just out of place, out of position. That was one of the biggest questions going into the game and into the season, but I don't think they really have a better option. I mean, we could try to throw Uhlenkamp out there against Furman and see what he can do, but it looks like the team's pretty much stuck with Moto.
You know, and I'm not mad at Motu about that. I went over this today on our subscriber board. Over the last five recruiting classes, Virginia Tech has signed either two or two and a half Mike linebackers. You know, that kind of depends on how you view Devin Van Dyke, whether you view him as a Mike or a backer or whatever. But at any rate, they've signed two true Mikes over the last 5 years. And one of those, Carson Lydon, is a true freshman this year. And that's bad recruiting. Yeah. And I know a lot of people are going to go out there and say, oh, well, if Tech didn't put any linebackers in the NFL but because of their scheme. But let's see. Look around the ACC. Does Pitt have any linebackers in the NFL? Does Duke? Duke was able to recruit Kelby Brown. He's a really good player, or he was a really good player. I mean, Syracuse, do they put linebackers in the NFL? No. Does NC State put linebackers in the NFL? No. Does Wake Forest? No. But guess what? They all have better middle linebackers than Virginia Tech. I mean, that excuse doesn't hold up to me. I just don't think Virginia Tech did a good job targeting Mike linebackers over the last 5 years, and it's catching up with.
Do you think Matua-Puaka can get better as a player, or he's not a guy who has a really high ceiling at the end of the day?
You know, that's kind of tough to tell at this point. I do think he can get better, but some of the things I'm seeing out of him, like his ability to change directions in the open field, and that's one of the things that worried me last year. I remember when that Duke running back caught him in the open field and just juked him out of his shoes, and you just don't see that happening to Tech Mike, to the really good Tech Mike linebackers of the past, even early in their career. Like, you know, true freshmen aren't ready as Mike linebacker, but Tech's best Mike linebackers have been ready as redshirt freshmen, like Jack Tyler and Vince Hall and people like that. So, I'm a little bit concerned. I won't lie. I'm very, very concerned because his backups are a couple of walk-ons, one of which is a 207-pound walk-on who's coming out of a torn ACL.
And that's our number two.
And that's his number two. And the number three is another walk-on who I don't think has ever gotten into a game. I think he's still on the scout team. And then you're redshirting a true freshman, Carson Lydon, and Virginia Tech hasn't played a true freshman, Mike, in at least 23 years. I mean, you're just – they didn't recruit well that position over the last 5 years.
What did you think of the way you saw Kendall Fuller play? It seemed as though he was a step slow.
He's hurt.
Yeah. Is he actually hurt?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, in fact, at the press box, Will Stewart was sitting right next to me. He said, you know, Kendall Fuller's not 100% healthy.
You know, we're not supposed to report on what we see at practice, but I was walking up to practice last week and I'll say this now since it's after the game, but when I was walking up to wait for interviews, I just happened to look out the window and I saw Kendall leaving the practice field before practice ended. Mm-hmm. And you know, he missed that one scrimmage and was on the sideline with his knee wrapped. And then somebody, I guess it was Saturday night, sent me a message on Facebook. And this was a guy who broke the news to me like a couple years ago when Virginia Tech was wearing gray uniforms against Alabama. So I knew he had a source on the staff somewhere, and he told me that Kendall Fuller was hurt. He was going to wear either a brace or a sleeve or a wrap or something on his right knee. And then the coaches were concerned that he might not be able to make it through the entire season.
Wow.
So I went into that game thinking, man, Virginia Tech just lost their number one advantage over Ohio State.
So they lost their starting quarterback and their best all-around NFL prospect.
Right, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's so unfair to judge Kendall Fuller on that game.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think there's like an NFL scout out there saying, like, I saw that. Didn't look that good out there.
I responded to it, and I said, you'd realize he was hurt, right? Check the film. He's got a sleeve on his right knee. And he was like, well, it was based on last year's film. And he had a broken wrist last year, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, Kendall Fuller is a great football player, and it's unfortunate that he wasn't 100%. It's unfortunate that Michael Brewer wasn't able to make it through the game. Here's a stat for you, though. Last year's game and the first two quarters of this game, Virginia Tech outscored Ohio State 52-35.
Whew.
Yeah.
Jeez.
And, you know, with 2 minutes left in this game, or in the third quarter of this game, it was a four-point game.
Mm-hmm.
This game was not over until everybody realized that they weren't going to be able to win it without Michael Brewer. And it took a couple of drives of Brendan Motley being the quarterback, and I think everybody in the crowd realized that they had no hope to win it without Michael Brewer. And let's be honest, the team realized it too. They will not admit that, but it was fairly obvious.
Mm-hmm. What did you think after Ezekiel Elliott had that 80-yard touchdown run? Were you like, all right, the doors have blown open. They're going to blow out. They're going to blow out Virginia Tech.
I was wondering where the heck our middle linebacker was.
he was way out of position on that one. But I mean, you've got to give. I mean, looking at a positive, you got to give Virginia Tech credit for battling back after that 80-yard touchdown run and coming back with that 17-14 halftime.
I think Tech played well. I think if they hadn't lost Brewer, they would have lost the game by 10 to 14 points, mm-hmm. which is a heck of a lot better than anybody played Ohio State last year except for Tech.
Yep.
And I think we'd be sitting here saying, man, Michael Brewer played well. We got a good football team. If we can just fix a little bit on defense, our offense is much improved, and we got a great chance to win the Coastal Division. But now he's hurt, and we can't say quite a bit of that.
Now, before Brewer got injured, how do you think he played? Like, to me, it looked like there were a couple throws that were behind mm-hmm. receivers, like Ryan Malik bailed him out a couple of times. Now, that may have just been running the wrong routes, or I mean, we don't know exactly what that is, but it seemed like he was thrown behind receivers and was a little bit off target at times before he started to get into a groove.
He wasn't quite settled in early, but once he settled in, he was pretty impressive. He obviously knew where to go with the ball.
Right.
That's the main thing. He made very, very quick decisions, and when Motley came in, you could just see it. I mean, he just wasn't able to make a quick decision like Michael Brewer. He just doesn't see the field fast enough. Not as fast as Michael Brewer. Michael Brewer is 23rd in the country in pass efficiency right now. And almost everybody in front of him played like a FCS team in the first week.
Well, I guess he'll probably stay around that mark because he's not going to be playing any more games for a while.
Might
move up, actually.
Yeah, they're going to probably move up. But, you know, I've been depressed a lot the last few years.
Yeah.
But I was really tired on Monday night / Tuesday morning. I had a full day tailgating, went to the game, parked on Roanoke Street, walked a lot 5, back and forth. You know, I was tired. I still couldn't sleep because that really bothers me that he got hurt, man, because I thought he was going to have a good season. I thought Tech was going to have a good season. If they could stay healthy, here we go.
Yeah. We've got much more with Chris Coleman coming up next. You're listening to The Drive with Kevin Weiss on ESPN Blacksburg, AM 1430, FM 94.1. Welcome back to The Drive with Kevin Weiss on ESPN Blacksburg, AM 1430, FM 94.1. We've got Chris Coleman from TechSideline.com in studio. And Chris, I guess the prognosis for Michael Brewer is out 1 to 2 months. If that's the case, you think they should try to seek a medical redshirt for him and see if he can return?
I don't think they can.
Okay.
I don't think he's eligible. He played, obviously all of last year for Virginia Tech. He played in both those seasons for Texas Tech. I think he played in, you know, five or six games as a backup 1 year, and he was hurt at the beginning of the next year, but he still came back.
Okay.
And played in two or three games at the end of that year as a backup. If he hadn't played in those two or three games, I think he would be eligible. But, at this point, I think it is what it is. This is the last year, unfortunately. He's been snake bit.
And I think another question could be, how effective would he even be if he's able to return this year after missing all that time?
Yeah, fortunately, it's his non-throwing shoulder. But, he would have to get back into the swing of things. You know, you couldn't expect him to come out there and be on point the first week he returned. Mm-hmm. So, let's just say, let's call it 6 weeks, and he comes back for the Duke game. And let's say, Okay, 1 to 2 weeks of kicking the rust off. You're talking 2 months until we see the real Michael Brewer again. Now, maybe he's a fast healer. We'll see. We know he's obviously extremely, extremely tough. I wouldn't put it past him to try to say, look, listen, just put a lot of protection under my shoulder pads and let's go. I'm sure he'll try to do that. Whether they let him or not, I don't know. But the season certainly got a lot more interesting in a bad way.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people I projected them 9-3. Some people had them 10-2. Mm-hmm. What is your new outlook?
That's a great question. I had them anywhere between 8-4 and 10-2. 8-4 if they caught some bad breaks. 10-2 if they caught the right breaks. But 9-3 most likely. I think this is probably going to cost them at least 2 games.
Mm. So you're looking at 7-5, 6-6.
Yeah.
Do you think the coaching staff would get a reprieve with that?
I don't know.
Hey, our quarterback's injured. Kendall Fuller may not be injured.
Yeah, I don't know.
Or should they?
I felt terrible for Scott Loeffler. I mean, he didn't create this situation.
He's had a lot of bad breaks. Loeffler has.
Oh God, he's snake bit. I mean, you go back to his days at Auburn, and he didn't have a quarterback. I mean, everybody loves Gus Malzahn and thinks Scott Loeffler ruined the Auburn offense, but the fact of the matter is, in Gus Malzahn's last year as Auburn's offensive coordinator, they finished like 100th in total offense. They didn't have the players. Then Loeffler took over in the next year, finished about the same as Malzahn the year before, and then their coach got fired, and then he came to Virginia Tech, where, guess what? He didn't have any players. I mean, as soon as he gets here, his best receiver, Ryan Mallett, gets hurt. His quarterback's a former tight end. His top two receivers, one of which, Joshua Stanford, now plays for Kansas, the worst program in America.
Oh, yeah.
The other was Dimitri Knowles, who can't even get on the field with his current team. He had nothing on that team. And all freshman last year. I mean, he's a snake bit football coach, it seems like.
So where do we go then? Is it Motley? Is it Durkin? Is it Lawson? Where do we go?
I think I'd play them all this week, or play two of them. And not just, let's throw Dwayne Lawson out there in the fourth quarter when it's 40-3 or whatever. I think if you want to make a decision, if you want to make it an open competition, then the guys you want involved, you want them to get real game reps when the game is on the line, when it's not the fourth quarter. And that's how I think it should be handled. But it's a tough, tough situation, man. That is a tough situation. No matter how you handle that situation, somebody's going to criticize you. It could go completely wrong because I don't think there's a good option there. I mean, Brendan Motley never passed for 1,000 yards in high school. He was a wing T quarterback. As a junior, he attempted 92 passes. You could attempt 92 passes in two or three games at the college level. I mean, he does not have the background of being a passing quarterback, and that showed against Ohio State. I think you got to simplify things, but the problem is, they'll stack the line to stop the run because they know we won't be able to throw it. And Brendan Motley's had injury histories in the past. His strength is running the read option, but, I think he's had a collarbone injury himself, a back injury, and a concussion. And only one of those has been a contact injury. I mean, he's been fairly brutal in the course of his career, too. So if you hand him the ball a lot, who knows? Is he going to be able to stay healthy? I don't know. This is a bad situation.
Yeah.
I mean, people don't understand that this is not good. I mean, it's really not good.
So is Durkin even on the list then?
Yeah. I mean, I think he has to be. But at the same time, he was a project, too. A project with a higher ceiling than Brendan Motley. I mean, some other 1A schools, some other FBS schools wanted Durkin, whereas that wasn't really the case for Motley. I think, Georgia Tech recruited him as an option quarterback, and UVA recruited him maybe as a safety, maybe as a quarterback. I don't know. But the fact of the matter is, nobody really wanted him as a quarterback. So Durkin's got a higher ceiling, but he's only a redshirt freshman.
Yeah.
Brandon Miley's, or excuse me, Dwayne Lawson's got the highest ceiling at all, but he's a true freshman. People don't understand how hard it is to play quarterback is a true freshman. And people are talking about the Rosen kid at
There's
UCLA.
Only so many Josh Rosens
Only so many Josh Rosens, plus he enrolled, he was at spring practice, right?
Yeah.
Dwayne Lawson got here a month ago.
Yeah, and only so many Tyrod Taylors, too.
Exactly.
That's really the only person in our history that you can kind of go back to and say, oh, this guy played as a true freshman.
Yeah.
He was able to kind of go through and do it. He's a four-star kid. He's got a lot of things that are in relation to Lawson.
Mm-hmm.
Man, that's a tough road to hoe.
Oh, it is, man. And I feel terrible for Loeffler, man. Like I said, I think he's snake bit. I think he's one of those guys who snake bit. I equated it to like my former favorite NASCAR driver, Elliott Sadler, who would always run in the top 10, but something would happen to him every week. One week, his seatbelt broke. One week, he was winning the Daytona 500, got passed by a couple of cars, and it started raining. They stopped the race. And if it had started raining 30 seconds before, he would have won the Daytona 500. I mean, he's just one of those guys that was always snake bit. And that Scott Loeffler's career as an offensive coordinator, whether it was at Virginia Tech or before Virginia Tech, it just kind of reminds me of that.
So against Furman, what would you like to see them do with the quarterbacks? Just put all three of them out there and roll through, or just pick two and go from there?
Either one of those would work for me. I mean, I think if you're going to try, if they think that they should try Dwayne Lawson, they need to do it this week.
Right.
They don't need to wait anymore and throw him in there his first game on the road against Purdue or on the road against East Carolina. They need to do it at home against a team like Furman. So I'd be willing to bet we see him this weekend. But the thing, if you play him, I don't think waste his red shirt to play in three games the rest of the year. You start him.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really tough. Here's the thing. If they don't think he's going to start the rest of the year, then keep the red shirt on him, I think. But if you play him, I think you got to start him.
Yeah.
Or at least until Brewer comes back.
Yeah.
It's a tough situation. I mean, Purdue next week, that's no guarantee either.
I watched their Marshall game.
Appleby did throw two pick sixes.
Dwayne Lawson might come in there and throw some picks, but that Purdue quarterback will throw you something.
All right, Chris, we appreciate it. Hopefully things look up for Virginia Tech. We'll see. This Furman game's really going to say a lot. I didn't think I'd say that a week ago. But
yeah, I don't think I'd ever be so interested in a Furman game.
Yeah.
But.
All right, well, we'll see you next week, Chris. Thanks again.
Sounds good. Take care.
You're listening to The Drive with Kevin Weiss on ESPN Blacksburg, AM 1430 FM 94.1.